Debate is not just for nerds and dorks,
Yeah.
guys. Debate really benefits you a lot in your career, in your life after school, and this is really what we want you guys to remember.
Entrepreneurs love talking about business. However, it's no secret there's also so many things they love talking about which are not about business. In the Sea of Business podcasts, none of your business is a refreshing break, a surprise kiss, an afternoon fizz. Through Carla Singson's cheeky and radical takes on mundane and principle-heavy topics, you'll gain insights that guarantee you something to talk about on your first Tinder date, while visiting grandma, or if you want to impress your new boss. Big thanks to Proximity Outsourcing for sponsoring this episode. Outsource the most tedious tasks in your business, such as data management, appointment setting, and creatives, for less than $12 an hour, fully managed. Visit ProximityOutsourcing.com for more info. Tired of business podcasts? Tune in to None of Your Business. New episodes weekly.
Are you spending too much money on ads? Want to increase your average order value? Are you eyeing that big exit from your business? Or have you been wondering how you can increase your lifetime value, build a community, and basically make more money through customer loyalty and retention? Let us help. Huckleberry Consulting brings over a decade of experience in client and customer success from the world's biggest companies. Let your customers tell you what they want. Visit consulthuckleberry.com to claim your free audit and quit leaving money on the table. Once again, that's consulthuckleberry.com. See you there.
Hey guys, good welcome. Good morning. Kabla ka na, editor. Hey guys, good morning and welcome to another episode of None of Your Business. Today is a super fun episode. Actually, I've been looking forward to this episode for a very long time. I have one of my bestest friends in the world. I basically bullied her into coming to this podcast after I scammed her to be a bridesmaid at my wedding. So my guest today is Kim. She is a user experience program manager at Google. Kim leads the cross-functional effort behind a program called DORA, which studies capabilities, practices, and measures of high-performing technology-driven teams and organizations. She also oversees its research operations and the publication of its industry-defining annual report since 2022. Kim also works as a portfolio lead for user research initiatives in Google Cloud. Prior to Google, Kim enjoyed a career working in technical program management and agile coaching. Kim's roots are in psychosocial research, focused on topics of extrajudicial killings, urban poor development, and community resilience in her country of origin, the Philippines. So we got a big wig right here. Hey, Kim, how are you?
I am good. I'm not a big wig. I have short hair, actually.
She has a short wig. So, yeah. Thank you so much for agreeing to this podcast. What were you thinking when I asked you to talk about debate on my podcast?
this is how we met. This is how we met. We met through debate. We were in school together,
mm-hmm.
and we shared an interest. We were in the same club. I thought when you asked me, it was a good place to start. It's almost like, you know, recapping or reminiscing the beginnings of our friendship.
Right.
So I think this is a really good topic to start with, because we've been brainstorming about what topic we were going to go over, because, you know, you and I are kind of like consummate professionals. So we could talk about all the things, but I feel like this is a really good one.
Yeah, I know. And also for our listeners, since a lot of my listeners are entrepreneurs, I noticed that a lot of entrepreneurs and or entrepreneurial people are really curious about the lives also of corporate people. Like, we have so much respect for you guys because of how, like, first of all, how difficult it is to even get those jobs. Everyone wants these jobs.
Right.
And especially right now, where the job market is not looking very good, like, people who get to even keep these jobs, like, to be honest, it's very impressive. And us entrepreneurs, we always have a feeling of, I won't even be able to do that. Like, I don't
Oh,
think.
really? That's interesting.
Yeah, to be.
I find that really surprising because I feel like I have I'm intimidated by entrepreneurship personally. So I think there's some skill sets there
Right.
that I certainly could learn from as a person who works in sort of a big corporate setting for pretty much the entirety of my career. Yeah, I mean, we talked earlier about how daunting that jump is from corporate to entrepreneurship. You know, it's there's a reason, and the reason is there, you know, a lot of people who do that jump maybe sometimes underestimate how difficult that might be.
Yeah.
How, like, what challenges are associated to that? So, you know, I look up to entrepreneurs. That's, you know, that's my take.
Yeah, I guess that's also kind of a sign of a kind of a, like a self-awareness, right? Like, I guess we are where we are because the other option is too intimidating. I can only remember the one and only corporate offer I had was to work for Unilever. And the account that was offered to me was, I think it was Ponds, and it was like some sort of a marketing role, like a small marketing role. I was a fresh grad, but I told them, well, to be honest, I can't even do this because I my own face doesn't even agree to your product. Every time I use Ponds, I get pimples. So I told them that, and they kind of felt offended. And they were like, well, you need a job or not? And I'm like, I need the job, but it doesn't feel authentic. And they were just like, oh my God, what is wrong with you? You just have too much pride. Like, yeah. But yeah, let's talk about debate because I would consider us successful in our lanes, mainly because we're happy with what we're doing and we feel fulfilled. And for me, that is success. And one of the things that we always reflect about is how debate, our favorite social activity in college, led us to where we are now, loving what we do, whether like whichever path we chose, right? So I want to know for you, what first drew you to join the debate team in college, and what expectations did you have going in?
So I was debating in high school, and that's actually how we met our mutual friend Brunks,
Right.
because we went to the same high school, and I remember, you know, a sophomore year high school, there was a training offered at our college, at our university, that was being hosted by Ateneo de Manila, which at that time, I mean, up until this point, probably is one of the top debate teams in the Philippines.
Right.
So you had some of the, you know, the most successful Filipino debaters offering a workshop, a debate workshop to high school students. And I went to one of those, and that was sort of my intro into debate. Then coming back to high school, doing it competitively, but pretty much like entire, you know, for I love speaking in English. I love writing in English. I love the language. I don't know for your listeners, like, you know, Filipinos are, we have a pretty interesting relationship with the English language. And for the folks who speak it a little better than most, they tend to want to like go into writing. They tend to, you know, in my case, I really love extemporaneous speaking. I enjoyed speaking in public, and debate was sort of a natural evolution of that. So when I got to university, going through all the choices of the clubs, the most obvious choice was debate.
Right. Yeah, I love that. I think that obviously that background kind of just like led you to it, right? Like, you were debating in high school, It would be very unlikely if you took up basketball in college. Or, I don't know, chess. I think chess might be closer, no? I don't know. Music. You were
No.
into music
Maybe
too.
music. But
Music, yeah.
you see, music was sort of like, we went to a Jesuit school, we went to a Catholic school, so the music clubs were tied to
Gospel
church.
songs, yeah.
Yes.
Which
So it
obviously
was
you're allergic to. Just kidding.
I went to Catholic school all my life, you
Yeah.
know. So I was just like,
Enough is
this
enough, Char.
is enough is it's time to roll with the misfits.
Yeah. No, I agree. I agree. I do remember some of our friends who were into music, and they just didn't have any other choice. These are the people who love karaoke nights. They love just like hanging out with each other at the food court, bringing their guitar. And the only extracurricular they could do related to music was the church choir.
Yeah.
So for me, it was a more selfish decision to join debate. So I had this classmate. And she just felt very competitive with me. Every time
Yeah.
the teacher would release grades, she would ask me, how much did you get? And then I was obviously being immature, and I thought, how can I just win over her? Like, how can I just win? How can I beat her at something where she can't beat me? And so I saw like the debate team, the debate community, it wasn't a varsity yet. Announcing their trainings for like this small, very small, big amateurs tournament, right? But what was oh, it was like I forgot the name, but yeah, there was a small tournament. They'll train you for 4 weeks or something, and then you all compete. And so I joined that, and I loved it. And initially, I did it so that I can show this girl that I'm doing so I'm smarter than you, basically.
And you are, actually, it turns out.
Hopefully, the jury's still out on that. But
Really?
no, as I went to the trainings, I realized I really loved it. I actually had a traumatic public speaking experience in high school.
Oh.
Yes, I joined an extemporaneous speaking contest, and I bombed. I did so bad. I did so bad. It was so embarrassing. And after that, I didn't do any public speaking. I just did journalism. And then I was like, I was out. And then I did that in college, and it made me love public speaking again. But of course, it didn't come super easy. There were still other, kind of like, I would say bad experiences as a newbie, but we'll talk about that later. So now that you are in the career that you are right now, you've been working at Google for a while, you're making good money, you live a great life in LA. Which specific skills, like in debate, do you credit most? Which specific skill do you credit most to your debate experience, skill that you have right now?
Many, actually. The first that comes to mind for me is prep. You have a very limited time to prepare for a 7-minute speech. And prep basically helps you really focus your attention on the most important things to talk about. The other thing I would say that is very useful for me today is really listening, like active listening. Even though you're listening to argue, but at the same time, it's like, you know, there's a just having the ability to follow every word that somebody says because it's very critical to your ability to respond to that, and also just, you know, trying to figure out what somebody says, you know, and trying to encapsulate everything they say into a single sentence that you end up rebutting. Because again, like, you know, all the constraints of time in the debate format helps you be a little bit more precise in how you communicate. So I'd say prep and definitely active listening. And then the third thing is, you know, my favorite role Usually I love to start. So there are different roles and different qualities that are associated with certain roles in debate. I tend to be the person who sets the stage, sets the parameters for a debate. So I'm usually like a prime minister position or a leader of opposition position. So in either of those, you're sort of the first person to speak. And the main thing for these type of roles is that, the case construction skill comes really handy. So I read a lot. I think I definitely developed a really good reading, studying habit out of debate that just, because I always think about what's going to be useful for me to talk about eventually. So I consume information like a sponge. And I think it started there, honestly, because, I would ask myself, like, will this be useful for me later? So the other thing too is just being able to be receptive to different sources of information, and then using that for later for case construction. So just being able to sort of have a wider view of things around the world, I think, yeah, it helps a lot even in my career.
Yeah, I like that because there was a saying I remember when we were in debate that you need to read everything from the Bible to the back of a shampoo bottle, right? That was always, and it's like everything is matter, so you have to read everything. And to
Matter load.
add matter loading, yeah, that's the term that they use. And to add to that also, I think that it continuously like encourages a natural curiosity about things, right? And it doesn't come like immediately, but as you're reading, you're acting like a little detective. Like, why is this? What is the context behind this? What are the nuances here? These are words that we use in debate every day, literally. And I learned right now as in being in business, dealing with people, talking to people, also being in sales every day. I have sales conversations every day. Knowing the context, explaining certain nuances, even knowing certain words such as net detriment, net benefit, it's like it just makes me become more articulate. And that helped me, honestly, for lack of a, for to make it easy, it helped me achieve everything I want in life. Like, you know what I mean? It's like if I want something, I'll negotiate for it, then, but debate helped me like say it better. So, yeah, something like that.
It's definitely like we did a little shortcut into building the kind of communication skills that a lot of people needed a few years of their career to develop. Because I remember when I was starting, when I entered the workforce for the first time, I think that was one of the most impressive things that people found about the way I communicated is that how articulate I am. Like my emails were so detailed, or they would realize that I have a way of communicating that was not junior sounding. So it is, it does develop a confidence in the way you speak because you do know very basic elements of communication through debate. So we did a shortcut, and people just learn that and they go to leadership training or whatever to learn those things. You know what I mean?
They go to Toastmasters,
You do.
which
I mean,
takes
Toastmasters is
years.
good. You can start early with Toastmasters too, but if you didn't, if you didn't get the chance to, then you'll never learn those things. So I think it's a shortcut. So people can who start with it when they're young, as soon as they enter the workforce, they're kind of like ready to go.
I mean, it's not a surprise that most of the people we know in the debate team are pretty successful. They are, employed. They have great jobs. They're paid very well. I'm not gonna lie. Everyone I know is paid
Everyone's
very well.
pretty successful.
Pretty successful, but living a good life. They can they travel. They start their own businesses and employed people. So there is. There are, you can see that there is a commonality of the of these skills and how they are naturally built up in debate. But of course, debate is not rainbows and butterflies. I'm sure that you've had some funny or traumatic experiences that really pushed you to improve, gave you a baptism of fire. I definitely have one that I remember. I'm gonna start sharing so you can think about yours, but I had this funny experience that people still tease me about it, but I had this prime minister speech. Prime minister is the first speaker in any debate tournament, the first ever speaker in the round. And I hate doing prime minister speech. I just hate it. I don't want to be the first to speak because I like it better if I'm waiting for someone to say something wrong. Don't tell my husband. But but I did a very bad prime minister speech, and it was about should we sanction, I think, Iran for some of their questionable military activities, something like that. I forgot what it was about, but it was something like that. And then I proposed that we should embargo their uranium. And then I didn't know that embargo was an economic sanction at that time. I thought that embargo is to confiscate, which is how we use embargo in Bisaya. That's what I thought. And then the opponents, they kept asking me, like, they kept raising a point, or it's an interjection in debate. It's like a 15-second interjection to your speech. And they were like, how are you gonna embargo their uranium? Like, how are you even gonna do that? And it was so stupid. So and then I to add to that, a normal debate speech is 7 minutes. I only did my speech for 1 minute and 50 seconds. It was
Oh, that's
so
brutal.
bad. Yes, I
No.
remember. Yeah, Sam, our friend, was the adjudicator, and he kept laughing, and he was like, I took your he was like, in your last round, everyone was amazed because I had like a really high score. And then Sam was like, oh, I want to watch this girl. And then he saw that round, like the worst round of my life. So, you know, until now, every time I see our friends Marge and Sam, we still laugh about that. So,
That's so funny.
yeah. How about you?
Oh man, it's been so long. It's been years.
Memory lane.
Yeah, you know what? Actually, one of the more memorable experiences I had was probably when I did adjudication. And, because you can adjudicate competitively too.
Yes.
And then this was at the Asian University Debate Champs. So I had, if you compete as an adjudicator, you're basically alone. You don't have your teammates with you. It's a little different. And what was interesting was I had, I was in a panel, maybe was it three or five other adjudicators, and then all of them were shy for some reason. Everyone was shy. Everyone was smart, but they were shy. They didn't want to talk. So I had to be, for the first time, act as a chair and explain the decision afterwards. So, adjudicators, basically, you deliberate with other adjudicators who won the debate. You discuss what the points were, and then somebody, the chair, will have to deliver the decision who won, and you have to explain yourself. And it was my first time giving my adjudication speech, and I think I bombed it because right after giving the decision, that team that lost was like complaining to the committee, like basically to the organizers about what happened. And like they talked to me afterwards and asking why the decision was the decision. So being able to kind of like in a defensive position about what happened. In the end, they ended up, I mean, the score was already settled. Like they couldn't change the score because we already made the decision. But I can tell you that they stared at me all tournament. They were just definitely just like staring at me with daggers. Like it wasn't just my decision, it was everybody's decision. I just you know, the way that I delivered the message was wrong or was flawed. So see, imagine, like, I was definitely confident the decision was right. It was just the way I said it was wrong.
Yeah.
So I learned from that, and I was like, okay, well, I got to do a better job. And how, so I made some friends who are other adjudicators from other teams. And I was like, how would you do this? Like, you know, what kind of context setting do you do to deliver it? And it got a little bit better for the rest of the tournament. But all I'm saying is, like, it's really a lesson of, it really depends on how you deliver the message.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I think that sometimes a lot of people argue that being a competitive adjudicator is more difficult because you have to convince 8 people or 6 people that you made the right decision. Whereas if you're debating, you need to convince one person or maybe a panel that may also feel differently about your what you're arguing for. So for those who don't know, Kim already mentioned this, but yeah, adjudication, judging, and delivering that speech about your decision is also a competition in debate tournaments. Mm-hmm. And actually, adjudication also develops a lot of the same skills. But if they have a little bit of an advantage, it definitely helps you sharpen your critical thinking and decision-making skills more than debate, in my opinion.
Yeah, and you have to listen to both sides, and you can't be biased necessarily. You'll have a bias for sure going in.
Yeah.
Because you probably, you know, there's also this thing that they warned us about during adjudication orientation was that somebody might sound persuasive, but their points are actually empty.
Exactly.
So, you know, like note taking, like actually writing down your notes and what they're saying, and being able to repeat that back to yourself in your head.
Yeah.
To really verify if they're actually saying something substantial or not.
Exactly. And you're right, like getting rid of those discriminating like points or something, because our brains are trained to simplify things for us. We are judging creatures, right? So if someone comes from a good school, or if someone is dressed a certain way, or their accent is better or easier to hear, there are some unspoken biases that could happen, and even unconscious. And so having that training is also very helpful when you're in business, or when you have basically like a high level role at a company as big as Google.
Yeah, I mean, definitely it's sort of like, you know, the heuristics thing comes in. So I think the lesson there is being persuasive and being substantive both would make you much more, how should I put it? You're much more compelling as a communicator if you can do both.
Right. Yeah. So debate is not always easy. There's a lot of challenges that we face. And can you tell us about a time when you had to either face a tough opponent or a complex topic? How did you adapt your strategy, and what did you learn about resilience?
Man, I don't even remember. It's been so long. So I just remember feeling really intimidated when I know that I'm about to go up against a team that was either seeded or was like, you know, from one of the top, one of the champions. So you'll actually hear about, you'll know these people, like they always win. And when you get, you know, and you have opportunities to observe them as well, the way they speak. So I just remember feeling nervous for some of those types of debates, because you do so many at some point, but then the ones that do stand out are the ones where you're like, oh no, I am gonna go up against UP, I'm gonna go against DSL, you know, the DLSU, and you know those people, DSLU, and then they tend to win all the time. I think one of the things that I realize is that you can be just as good. You just have to believe in it. The underdog mentality is really rife in life a lot. You know, you could be sitting across somebody who has all the credentials, and they may be able to back up those credentials, but it doesn't mean that you can't go toe-to-toe with them necessarily. And I realized that because in some of the judgments, they're like, oh, this person, you actually made a very valid point, you know? So somebody was able to validate that you had something to say. So that definitely builds confidence. On the flip side of that, obviously, you have to also learn how to receive feedback that is not necessarily favorable to you. So whether it's in training, whether it's in competition, like you'll hear people tell you that, hey, you know, what you said made absolutely no sense. So, you know, so just being able to like have a thicker skin for critical feedback, not taking it personally, being able to sort of extract yourself from, you know, thinking that you are not competent or you're not smart enough or whatever. I think it's very, you know, we develop resilience by way of learning how to be more receptive to feedback, whether it's positive or negative.
I like that.
So
I like that a lot because honestly, you know, we have all these big egos and it's tough to receive feedback sometimes. And it's very important because it's really the only way that you can improve.
Right.
My big learning and debate that has helped teach me about resilience, honestly, it is a lesson on stamina. So I remember when we used to compete, we would go to these tournaments and the tournaments would be, we wake up early, we have to do breakfast. Usually we would travel to go to this place, and because we were broke, we would take the bus instead of the plane. So we're so tired, and then we have to wake up early. Sometimes we sleep late because we're still reading news articles so that we can matter load. And then we start the round, and we're given 15, if it's British parliamentary, we're given 15 minutes to prep, or 30 minutes if it's Asian. We debate for an hour. We wait for probably 15 minutes for deliberation, another 15 minutes to listen, and maybe 15 minutes to go back to the room. And then we do that four times because there's four rounds. I always notice that after the second round, I'm always going to round three really tired, mentally and physically. And I remember one of our coaches, mentors, Andrew, he always said, no, you got to keep your stamina because people who don't have stamina, they lose. Sometimes you win just because you have stamina. Your brain should not go like down because it's a later part of the day. And so after that, I actually started taking energy drinks. And when I wasn't when I wasn't allergic to caffeine in college, I started taking energy drinks. I would put extra Joss in a 1 liter bottle, and I would just drink a little bit each round, and it kept my stamina up.
Oh, and, interesting.
Yeah. And, but every time I would do that, I would just crash in the night. I would just sleep so, like deep, and then I would just crash. It's normal. You know, I was young, and I had, my body was more resilient too. But looking back, I always remember that lesson right now. Every time I join another tournament, like I used to play a lot of poker tournaments, and I would play for 17 hours straight. I would just sit down, and I, you know, I would have to do some math, and I would have to whatever. Or in business, I would work 12 to 16 hours a day for months when I'm starting a new business. And I always remember to that lesson about stamina. Sometimes the people who win are not the people who are better, but the people who can do it for longer. And that really stuck with me, and I'm super grateful that I learned that in debate.
Wow, that's actually a good lesson. I haven't thought about it that way because, you know, I think part of it too that made it easier for me was that we're kind of in a team of friends. I find energetically I'm able to refuel just like talking to friends throughout the day. And, you know, like you're tired and you're talking about how tired you are with somebody that can relate to what you're going through, it's already energetically helpful. So yeah, that's a good one. I didn't think about it that way, but that's, you know, you're teaching me something.
I'm happy about that, because it's, for me, debate was such a good memory. Honestly, it was the best thing I've ever done in college, honestly. And
yeah.
And I think it was really our life outside of school, right? It was really our life. It was our bestest friends.
We kind of shaped our life around it.
Yes.
Yeah, because I think for people who are not familiar with this particular world, is that you train a lot. You have to train. You have no choice. It's like an after school program, but
every
like,
day. Yeah.
But it's very effortful.
Yes. Yes.
Yes. And so you can, and then when you're closer to competition, you're pretty much just practicing all night, like sometimes till midnight.
Literally.
Yeah. It's like wild. I mean, athletes do that too. You know, they have to, they have to practice a lot more closer to competition. It's the same for this particular, it's competitive.
Yeah,
it's like a competition for your brain. But
yeah, exactly.
You know? So yeah, you have to train, and your life sort of revolves around it at some point.
Yeah, that's so true, and it's such a misconception that people think that debaters just love to argue, because it's not actually. We love to not argue. We just we just like to persuade you into believing.
Yeah.
The side that we're on. So there's something that I'm really curious about, Kim. I'm sure you have defended sides in debate that did not align with your personal beliefs. How did you compartmentalize, and what did you learn in that experience that you carried in your work?
That's a really good question. I think one of the topics that really bothered me had to do with, you know, prostitution, actually. It's actually a classic debate topic, like, should we legalize prostitution? And depending on which context you're talking about, it's always sort of a dicey topic. I think I was on one side one time where it was defined like, you know, I'm actually pro prostitution,
legalizing prostitution.
Yeah, you know, I just think like, you know, I'm in favor of regulation and sort of figuring out how to best protect, because in my mind, when people it's one of the oldest professions in history,
right.
So even if you illegalize it, it would still exist in black markets. So, you know, really kind of the focus should be around how do we protect women? That's kind of my perception. And I had to defend a side in which, you know, it was just outright illegalize it. I think what I learned from that is, you know, really trying hard to sort of come up with what could the other side be thinking about?
I like that.
What could they be, you know, how would they actually defend this? And, you know, in the corporate setting, I'm always thinking about, and you know, I'm working with multiple leaders. They all have different focuses. They all have different priorities. So I'm always thinking about a step ahead of, and you become a lot more strategic when you start thinking about where people are coming from, what they're needing, what, you know, what's actually driving their actions.
Yeah.
So just being a lot more inquisitive around the other side of things, you know, not just like originating your ideas from where you're from, where you're sitting, where you're from, because it's more comfortable just to think about from your point of view.
Yeah.
It's a lot more uncomfortable to think about another person's point of view.
Yeah, I totally agree, 100%. For me, to take that further, that mindset is really effective in sales, because sometimes, like in my experience as an entrepreneur, because sometimes I don't fully understand someone's reality, because obviously I'm biased to my own product or service. And in my head, I'm like, why wouldn't you buy this? Like, you obviously need it. You obviously have this problem. You know, I'm obviously a good service provider. So what's going on? And if I don't approach that situation with natural curiosity, putting myself in their shoes, listening to them, like you said, even if we are indifferent, you know, I believe they should buy, they don't believe they should buy. But I wouldn't be able to properly handle their objection if I don't put myself in their shoes. So I do appreciate debate in helping me be more open, even when I'm trying to understand why they're trying to do something that's not beneficial to me.
And you know, I can appreciate sometimes being able to talk to people who have different points of view. Or believe different things from what I believe in. I just love being able to have a conversation that you don't take personally. Like, we live in a world right now where, you know, everybody just takes everything personally.
I
So,
know, yeah.
and it to me, like, I get it. And I also see, this is me, like, already rationalizing for others. Like, I get where you're coming from, why you take this personally. But like, my point of view is this, you know, or this person's point of view is that. They're not really, it's not an attack in some other people's minds. They're in heavily invested in things. So just being able to sort of dissect different points of view on any given topic helps you sort of reach a certain calmness around being face to face with people who have very different perspectives, different beliefs, and that makes you more effective as just a human being, honestly, and just somebody that, you know, people love to work with.
Yeah, no, I totally agree because the fact that you are even like making space for that other, you know, other option, other mindset, it's already healthy in itself. And that even translates to like when you're being a parent or when you have a, you know, row with your sibling, it's like the you need to have that mindset. I would say the last thing I want to discuss about the skills and the benefits that we have with debate is developing confidence. We already talked about how hard it is actually to compete in debate. You know, you're given the topic 15 minutes before. So, was there a turning point in your confidence in debate that you remember? And what was your biggest win in terms of your career, just because you have the confidence to, that you got from debate.
You know, I remember one of our trainers, and this stayed with me. I think it was Benny who told me. She said that if you feel the butterflies in the stomach, if you feel butterflies in your stomach, then you're ready. And it just stays with me to this day.
I love
When
that.
I feel the signal in my body that I'm feeling nervous, that I'm, you know, I'm it's telling me like, okay, danger, danger. Instead of freezing, it's time to actually like walk in and embrace that experience in your body. The flip side of that, I think, is just thinking about like, is it nerves or excitement?
Right, because it's the same physiological experience.
It is. And then, you know, you kind of have to, I think when it comes to building confidence in that regard, when we have things that we're hesitant about, you know, our body is actually just communicating that you're going into sort of a transition into something that you're about to do that's going to be pretty exciting, pretty important to do. So just remembering like why you do something, why you're doing it, who are you doing it for, helps you sort of just embrace that feeling and then just going for it. I have had moments in my life, in my career, where I have felt those butterflies in my stomach. And I think, like, you know, when you take that step forward after those butterflies, even with those butterflies with you, you just take it with you, and then you do the thing. It actually builds confidence in the end.
Yeah.
You know, you just walk around with your butterflies.
Oh, I like that. I love you that. That's a beautiful thought. Is it butterflies or ano? Kabag. Charot.
Or you have like a wasp hive gas. In there.
It's just gas pala.
it's just gas. Yeah. Hey, some people have rituals, you know.
Right.
Actually, when you're feeling nervous, people have rituals. Athletes do this too. Like, people who do high performance things will have rituals when they know they're about to do something super important, super competitive. So you got to ask yourself, like, what are the things that I need to do to be able to embrace this? Because it's going to happen. It's going to be, you know, it's going to be nerve wracking. It's going to be exciting. It's going to be like your body's going to tell you things. So what do I need to do to prepare for that? And yeah, some people change their socks. Or yeah, they go to the bathroom beforehand, like whatever you need to do, just do it.
Yeah. I love that. I do have, I did have my rituals. One of that was my energy drink. and then other, like, I think a particular bracelet or something, I forgot. But my share about confidence, I would say, if you are thinking about starting a business, one of the things that your business will really benefit from is if the owner is building a personal brand and you're seen on stages. So I've spoken in many stages around the world. And honestly, if I didn't have my debate experience, which is one of the most, like, difficult experiences, at least when I'm asked to speak, I have months to prepare. I have weeks to prepare. But in debate, you only have 15 minutes, you know? So, for me, being offered an opportunity to speak and I have tons of time to prepare, that really helped me, put me on the map. I've been in rooms where I don't even deserve to be in, or I felt like so, or I was like, I had like my imposter syndrome just really kick in big time. But if I didn't speak on stage, I would just continue having these doubts about myself. But, you know, when I started speaking on stages, people saw me as an authority. It's easier for me to close clients because they see me as a leader in the industry. So that's definitely a benefit. And then the other one that I would say also about confidence, I remember this other lesson that our mentors, Andrew and Opet Christopher, taught us. They always said, when you go to a competition, the debate doesn't start when you start talking. The debate starts when you enter the room. Which is just a reminder on how you should carry yourself all the time. And I think even at work, that's very important.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. I think, you know, there's power dressing sometimes. I think there's so many lessons in terms of how you show up. Because it's all part of the, again, like, you know, the persuasive angle that you have to be in. There's so many elements, there's so many psychological elements too, and how you persuade people, like, again, like the manner in which you speak to them, the substance of your speech, the, you know, what are other signals of credibility that you can convey to others about yourself. When people see you on stage, for example, like, that's definitely a signal of credibility. Like, what are things that you can build up and show to people, so sort of in a, even a peripheral way, that you are someone worth listening to?
Right. Exactly. Yeah, I like that. So that's definitely been very helpful, because it can get you certain promotions, get you certain favors, to be honest. In business, it can get you in certain rooms. So that is a huge benefit that we learned through debate. So, of course, in debate, because it's a scholarly activity, we have to dress a certain way and we have to basically behave like lawyers. I mean, even people who are in trial, diba? They are being taught to dress a certain way, wear their hair in a certain way. So there's definitely some science to that. So I would say, well, first of all, thank you so much, Kim, for hanging out with me and sharing your stories. I love walking down the memory lane with you. So for our listeners who may have people that they love, most especially their children, who are thinking about what extracurricular activity to take on in high school, in college, debate is not just for nerds and dorks, guys. debate really benefits you a lot in your career, in your life after school. And this is really what we want you guys to remember and think about. So what is your advice for parents or people with loved ones who are thinking about taking up debate?
Yeah, I mean, you know, debate, yes, we recommend it highly because, you know, we have a lived experience about, and we just shared it with you today on how that's impacted us in our careers. I would say that any type of activity that cultivates high performance, whatever that might look like, will teach you a lot. I think with debate specifically, it is more of a communication edge. You know, some people go into, you know, sports. They get very competitive and then they go enter the workplace and they're highly competitive. I've worked with some former athletes, like former Olympians, and they have certain mindsets about them that I really envy, honestly. Like they have, you know, they have a high performance mindset. And I think for debate specifically, it's there's that aspect, and then but also you build certain skills like communication and you know, like all the things that we mentioned today, just being able to have a multidimensional experience around just how you deal professionally with others. Yeah, so I think like any high performance activity is beneficial in general. I would ask myself or your children, or you're thinking about what activity they could explore, like where are they gravitating towards? What are the skills that they want to cultivate? They're interested in cultivating. What are skills that you want them to cultivate? You know, that you want to share with them is something that's dear to you. You know, like we have friends who are now have kids, grown kids, who have gone through debate tournaments themselves, and it's really fun to watch. You know, it's just like, oh, you're sharing something that I really love. Like, you know, it's something that you share with your kids. So what are the things that you know intimately that has helped you as a person, that you could influence your kids into going into? That would be cool, right?
Yeah, basically, you know, to like, I'm sorry for dumbing it down, but for me, it's like, if you want a hobby that's going to make you smart, like debate is definitely up there. You know, obviously you can take up chess, you can take up, I don't know, journalism. I know there's some journalism competitions in college. You can take up other sports that are not very physically strenuous. That's the other benefit too. It's not physically strenuous until the tournament where you really need the stamina, but you don't risk yourself for injuries. So there's that.
You don't risk a concussion.
You don't risk a concussion. Exactly.
Yeah. No, I have a friend who has a 16-year-old and she's panicking because he's trying out for a football team or something.
Yeah. Yeah. There you go. Don't give your mom a heart attack. Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, I would endorse it for that reason, you know. But yeah, I think debate is great. What is it in the States? They also have something else like the United Nations format, which is kind of cool.
Right.
It's also I forgot what it's called, but there are other formats. For me and Carla, we did British and Asian parliamentary debate, which had specific rules. So whatever it is, like, you know, looking at communication skills, business skills being built through this.
Yeah.
Highly recommend.
Yeah. In work, we call this like soft skills, but really these are the skills, communication, public speaking, confidence, critical thinking. really, these are the skills that make money. Like, that's all I'll say. I have never, like, every time I needed money, I always leaned on my, on something that relates to communications, whether I have to write a new offer, I have to email my list, or write a post to sell something. I've always leaned on my communication skills so that I can make more money. So, yeah. Well, thank you so much, Kim, for hanging out.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I'm super happy, and I'm definitely going to share this with our current team. And this is like, these are your aunties from 2009.
Is this the recruitment podcast?
Recruitment podcast, exactly. So, oh yeah, let's shout them out. So people who live in Davao, who have kids in, who study in Ateneo, definitely check out Ateneo Debate Varsity. They host a lot of trainings. They host amateur competitions. There's a lot of alumni support. We are very active in the community still. Every time I visit Davao, I try to drop by and deliver a class or two, give my support. It's a very supportive community. And yeah, debaters are definitely not dorks and nerds. And if we are, then it's worth it. It's worth it.
Yeah. It'll just be for those 4 years that you go into university. Yeah. And then you have your glow up era and you'll be fine.
and then you can afford it all because...
Yes, you can afford it. So you get a good job at that point.
Exactly. All right. Thank you so much, Kim. And thank you, everyone. By the way, quick announcement. I will be putting this podcast on a short siesta. So instead of publishing weekly, I will be publishing only monthly, and I will focus a lot of my time in the next month to also build my other podcast, which is going to be targeted to location independent business owners. Of course, none of your business is not going away. This is going to still be my passion project and my little space to have the conversations that I really like having that entrepreneurs are curious about. So find me on Facebook, find me on Instagram. If you like this conversation, please give us a 5-star review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. It really means a lot to me and my team. Okay, so thank you so much, guys, and see you next month for another episode of None of Your Business. Bye. So it's a wrap. To my entrepreneur friends, I hope that you found this episode interesting and enjoyable. I know I did. Big thanks to our sponsor, Proximity Outsourcing, for making this possible. If you need to outsource anything in your business so you can scale fast and easy, visit proximityoutsourcing.com and check out their solutions. If there's any topic that you want to request, feel free to reach out. I only have 2 conditions. You tell me why you find it interesting, and you promise it's not business talk. Find us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and YouTube, and leave us a comment or review because you're cool like that. This is your host, Carla, and thank you so much for joining me. Thank you for your interest in fun stories. Now we can get back to business. See you next week. And remember, everything here is none of your business.